Hi folks, welcome back to another edition of News Desk Unplugged. Japanese Grand Prix aftermath, straight to the point. Jad, you handled the aftermath. Tell us, what were the big stories? Let's start with Red Bull.
Red Bull won another 1-2, their third this season. And I think in qualifying, they equaled Mercedes' number of front row lockouts. So yeah, another achievement by the team. But it wasn't easy this time. You could notice it wasn't easy because, and it's something that all the other teams suffered from. You know, they missed FP2 because of the rain, so they didn't have this long race simulations, which they usually do on second practice, and which meant they had to deal with degradation surprises. And surprise, on Sunday, the temperatures went so high, and at the start of the race, degradation was disastrous for all the teams, and Red Bull seemed to suffer from that as well. But yeah, then the clouds came in, the track cooled down, and like Max said after the race, he just found his rhythm, and they just kept pushing. Yeah, you have this feeling, and I think, yeah, Red Bull still have a lot in reserve, but at this point of the season, I don't think it's the same gap or the same advantage which they had last year. I think the new car, it's fast, but I think they're just fine-tuning it, getting to know it better. And they had an upgrade package in Japan, so they didn't have enough time to optimize that package. Checo, on the other hand, excellent performance, less than a tenth off Max in qualifying. In the race, he kept in touching distance. They got undercut by McLaren at the start of the race because they were suffering with degradation on Checo's car, but then they came back and they took second place. Yeah, news around the paddock is that Checo is much happier with the car this year. And he's much happier with the front end of the car. And yeah, we could see I think it's the best start of the season for Checo with Red Bull, and in general, he's been doing great.
Yeah, I know. It was an awesome performance. I mean, I really didn't. I struggled for a headline because you had to mention both the drivers because, as you mentioned, Checo raised his game. I'm going to beg to differ in terms of the narrative. I mean, you know, honestly, what has come to my attention is the car is as good, as far as I'm concerned, as last year's car. It's doing the same thing, put it that way. It's a great package that he's put on there, and it's basically year one of the package, and it's already ahead of everybody else, you know. Everybody else is on, also went backwards and changed their packages, and they're all far behind. As far as I'm concerned, I think Red Bull are just going to dominate this season. I'm calling it now. Max Verstappen is world champion. He's world champion. Unless something horrific happens, this guy is world champion. And we saw that Newey probably looked at his car last year and said, it's a great car, the RB19, which it was. However, Sergio couldn't drive it. So he made a car that's far friendlier to both drivers. Perhaps it's maybe a tenth or whatever slower, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. They're still winning Grand Prix by 20 seconds to their next rivals, you know. So proper annihilation. I don't know how they're going to stop this team. Honestly, I don't know how. I look up and down the grid and I see no solutions. You know, they're just on another level. With Sergio now, like you said, delivering closest he's ever been, I think, for a long time to Max in quali. They hogged the front row. They hogged the two top steps of the podium. I think it's going to happen all year long. Honestly, I don't see the wheels coming off this thing because the wheels are coming off everybody else. That's how I look at it. So let's go. Ferrari, Sainz. I mean, you can't keep a good guy down, eh? I mean, the guy, again, pops up on the podium. What's your take on
that?
Yeah,
exactly. Look, you know, Sainz, he's been better than Leclerc from the start of the season. You know, he has a spring in his step after being fired, and he's out there to prove himself. And I think this is the best thing Ferrari did for him, firing him. Look at him now. He's you can't stop him.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And and while you might be a bit skeptical over the first few tracks because they're not your conventional classic tracks, the driver tracks, you know. Here in Suzuka, he beat Leclerc again in qualifying. Leclerc, based on his comments after quali and after the race as well, it seems that he's having a problem with preparing the tires on the car for this qualifying lap. And I'm going to hazard a guess here. You know, it's like last year, the car switched on quickly in qualifying. We knew that. And the new Ferrari, it's better in races. So I think this change the change that the team did with the car, making it more friendly on the tires during races, I think it's hurting Leclerc in qualifying. Sainz, on the other hand, being the thinker he is, being the strategic driver he is, he has a better grip on the car. And that's working for him in qualifying, that's working for him during the races. Yeah, Sainz, you cannot fault him for now. Hopefully we see the same consistency of him in the coming races. But, you know, this is the first driver's track. And you said it in one of your stories. It's the track that separates the men from the boys, you know? So
yeah,
that's it. Ferrari as a team, they were impeccable on strategy. They delivered a proper race. Pit stops were faultless. Strategy was faultless. You know, Sainz started in fourth. He gained a position by the end of the race. So that was through strategy. Leclerc started eighth. He finished fourth. Also, that's done with a very excellent first stint by Leclerc. One-stop strategy. So, yeah, it was a great delivery from Ferrari, but this is as much as they can do given the advantage of Red Bull, which I have to say something back to you, mate. I'm not saying they're not going to win the championship. They are. But
yeah, sure.
Last year, they were winning races by 50 seconds. This year, 20. So there is a difference. Ferrari
but
got
easier.
Better.
I think 20, but can I say this? 20, but it's easy. It's still easy. Guys like Prost, and that they win a Grand Prix as slow as possible. And they're proud of that, you know, because by doing that, they're preserving everything. Tires, engines, suspensions, everything. So, you know, 20 seconds is 20 seconds. It's a massive gap, you know. That's what I'm saying. Yes, it's maybe not as big as before, but I think they can drive the car a lot easier than they could last year. Maybe that's one of the things.
Exactly. But yeah, like you said, Max is driving towards his fourth championship.
Cool. Done. But listen, yeah. Enough of them. They just hog every headline. They just, I mean, you know, and every time we get quotes, I mean, honestly, one last word on the Red Bull. I get quotes from a lot of people, you know, Johnny Herbert, Jacques Villeneuve, Mika Hakkinen. You cannot find one guy who's not overawed by this kid. It's, like I said, enough for them.
Yeah.
Next best. So, look, let's establish pecking orders at the top is very easy. It's Red Bull with probably half a second in race pace and half a second in maybe a quarter second in qualifying ahead of Ferrari. And then who's next?
Still, mate, still the third best team. It's still a fight between Mercedes and McLaren. And this weekend it was McLaren, because McLaren, their car enjoys the first sector of Suzuka, this fast flowing sector. This is where the McLaren works really nicely. And yeah, they were better in qualifying. They were better in the race, but you're not as good as they were hoping. Like Norris was really upset after the race. He thought, yeah, he lost the podium there. He did great in qualifying to stick it up in third, but he lost the podium. And yeah, McLaren suffered a lot with tire deg, I think, during the race, and that destroyed the race. Piastri was average, I think, compared to what we expect from him. You know, he's a great talent, so he was a bit average this time. Honestly, I wasn't impressed with the way he lost his position in the end to Russell, because Alonso was playing, you know, one of those Alonso tricks. He was giving Piastri DRS on the straights, and then he pulls away in the corners to keep safe. And then when they're coming close to the DRS, he gives him the DRS again. And Piastri messed up. It worked well for a while, but then in the end he messed up. He didn't come close to Alonso, and then Russell overtook him. So I think it was an average race from Piastri, average overall for McLaren. But the great disaster we go now, second team, Mercedes.
I don't even think they're second, mate. I think they're fifth. I think Aston Martin are ahead of them, especially with Alonso driving. Okay, so one Aston Martin is way ahead and one is way behind. But let's go. Let's go Mercedes. What's your take on Mercedes?
Well, Mercedes, I think it was a rough race for them. You know, Lewis gave us some hope. He was better in qualifying than Russell. This is the first time this year. And but then, yeah, that's Suzuka and that's Lewis, you know, experience plays a role over there. And during the race, I think he said after the race, he had some contact with Leclerc on the opening lap, and he suffered from some damage on the car. The car was understeering all the time. He was given an order to move aside for Russell. He wouldn't have been happy by that. And look, there's some kind of a problem there at Mercedes, and they're not getting over it. I was talking to a friend of mine. He's well connected. He knows, and he said, "Look, ever since Mercedes lost Aldo Costa from the aero department, they haven't recovered." And you know, Aldo Costa is the guy who designed the silver arrows that dominated from 2014 till 2020 or 2021. And yeah, there's a gap there which they need to fill. That's a problem. Lewis is so disenchanted. You know, I think he just can't wait to get into a Ferrari. And yeah.
Yeah, look, I'm the same. I'm mesmerized by Mercedes' downfall, and the way they just continuously feed this narrative that they actually know where they're going. You know, even after the Grand Prix in Japan, where it was a really bad showing for them. Come on, it was P7, P9, right?
Yeah.
You know, that to me is just shows it. And Toto constantly saying that they know what the problem is, where they're going, and then Lewis arriving in Japan, all pumped up, does the FP1, you know, this is amazing. And, you know, this is the cars in the best window we've ever had it since I don't know what. And talk, but when it comes time to deliver, there's something amiss there, because I think they arrive convinced they have a solution. And even through FPs, they think they have a solution. Then they realize they don't. And in the race, they were the only guys on hards, right, to start, if I'm not mistaken. They went the different strategy, and it seemed to work at one stage, but then it faltered. And it was just like, you can see they're scratching the barrel of performance. They're still scratching their heads to how to make this thing go faster. They have not found the go fast button on this car. And they don't know how to find it. They don't know where to look. They don't know. It's quite disturbing that so many clever people, a team with such a huge budget, is actually struggling to match their customers. You know, I find it outrageous, actually, to a certain degree. Look at it this way. They've underperformed for 3 years under the current cabal or regime that runs the team, because it's not just Toto. You know, you can't just only blame Toto. Toto's put guys in places that must also carry the can. You know, James Allison, all those guys. You know, where are they? These are the smartest men on the planet trying to make a car go fast, and they don't understand what they've done. For three seasons in a row, you try and lose three seasons in a row and you like Real Madrid, but the whole management team will be sacked. You know what I'm saying? But the problem with Formula One these days, the Mercedes management team, the boss owns the team. So he's not going to fire himself, is he? You know, and honestly, who's going to take over from Toto? Their team's in a mess because they don't know how to get out of this hole. So it's just exposes everything that's wrong with Formula One. You know, when teams didn't perform, you fired people. They went, but you can't fire the boss. That's the problem. The boss owns the team. So Toto's actually got to sit down and see really where the problem is. Stop talking about it and stop talking about how they discover where they're going and that, because it's so tiring to have to report this stuff when you know it's not true. Do you know what I'm saying? So Mercedes are in a hole, and I'm really for Lewis. I love Lewis more than any driver, man. He's fantastic. He's to me like Max, Senna. These are guys that I love, you know. And Lewis going to Ferrari, it's the best thing that's ever happened, really. Even if he was on the podium occasionally, he's got to leave Mercedes. That era is over. That chapter is done. And maybe Toto's got to go too. You know when Ferrari, the great Schumacher era, came to an end? It was Michael who left, and then Todd lost the interest, and then everything went their own way, right? And I see that Mercedes, maybe at that point, thoughts?
There's a problem there. And like you said, Toto's just talking about that. We know the problem. And yeah, he's just talking about how no one can catch Max. This is the thing. And I think sometimes he goes back to 2021 and talks about Abu Dhabi. But I think hopefully by 2026, the cars are going to be a bit different. And, you know, with the new power units, if they mess up 2026, if they mess up the new car, I think, yeah, the Mercedes board should really sit down with Toto and the team and think about a way forward. They need a major reset. Especially, and it's okay for them to do it because Lewis will be with Ferrari at the time. So they don't have this huge driver that's putting pressure on them to give him a proper car. They can focus on rebuilding. Maybe 2026 will be this time. I'm not sure. But yeah, they started this era of regulations on the back foot, and yeah, they're not going to recover. You know, Ferrari, they started better than them, and they're improving. You know, they're not as good as Red Bull, but you can see an upward trend with Ferrari, but you're not seeing that with Mercedes.
Let's do Aston Martin now. Now, give us the background of the chassis, the new chassis, the old chassis, Alonso. I'll run you through qualifying, and then we'll talk about the race for them.
Well, basically, after Australia, Lance Stroll's chassis was shipped back to the headquarters in the UK. There needed to be some checkups, I think, on it. And at the same time, they took advantage and they bolted on the new upgrade package that was going to be debuting in Japan. For Alonso, Alonso's car flew directly from Australia to Japan. So they didn't have time to do the new package on it on site there. So they broke curfew on Friday night and they bolted the new upgrade on Alonso's car, and he started using it only in FP3. So basically Alonso had 1 hour to get used to the new upgrade. And that was a major upgrade. It was a new floor edges, floor fences. There was some change in the bodywork as well. So that was a major change for Alonso. And yeah, knowing Alonso, he just got in the car and just got on with it.
Yeah, in qualifying, it was interesting because Alonso was right at the top. I think he was P2 in Q1 or something to that effect, but he was at the sharp end. Lance was nowhere. Lance was 7/10 slower in a car that had spent 2 hours longer than Alonso had, you know, which prompted me to write the piece and ask the question. Time for Lawrence to take Lance for a stroll to say Formula One is not for him anymore. It's not. Really, you can just see it. The guy is just not on Alonso's class. And Alonso is a benchmark, much like Max Verstappen is. And he's failed miserably. 7/10. But there's no end in sight. He's not a rookie. This is a guy who got a lot of experience. And he's normally pretty good in good cars. He's very bad in average cars, but in good cars, he tends to be good. But he's not anymore. And I don't think he's interested. And it's very sad because Aston Martin's a serious project. As you can see with Fernando Alonso, he's really pushing, and driving the brand. And then you have a billionaire son just taking everything down. All the hard work goes down when you could have a young or even a veteran. I see Aston Martin being like a veteran place. So get someone else in there. Give Hülkenberg a go or whatever. But the bottom line is, Lance has passed it. Did he improve in the race? Did he even score points? You know, this is a car that Alonso puts right up there at the sharp end. I mean, what's your take on Stroll, honestly?
Look, I think we've talked about him a lot. And there's nothing there to say more. I was never convinced by him. You were even more convinced because of the occasional podium he got. And I think he got pole in Turkey in 2021. And for me, that didn't cover the fact that he's not going to cut it in F1. You know, he stayed there because his father spent all this money on him. And it was another example in Suzuka last weekend, that he's not cut for it. And I think, like you said, Aston Martin being a serious F1 project, Honda coming on board in 2026, I think the Strolls need to have a serious talk. Something needs to change there. Because look, yes, if you look at the constructors' standings now, Aston Martin are 1 point behind Mercedes, and Mercedes are horrendous. If Stroll was scoring points, Aston Martin would be ahead of Mercedes and even maybe ahead of McLaren.
Absolutely. No, that's a full stop on that. And another guy, man, how long is this guy going to stay on the grid? Daniel Ricciardo. Oh, my God. That was a horrible. I mean, if there was ever an accident that shouldn't have happened, and I really feel sorry for the guys, really. I felt so bad for Williams when I saw it was Albon. Honestly, I think, man, how much more? It's okay. It's enough. Karma, you know what I mean? Let's chill, because Daniel, we'll get into Williams after Daniel, but Daniel, man, thoughts?
Yeah, well, again, beaten once again by Yuki Tsunoda. at a track that promotes experience, which is what supposedly Daniel is bringing to the team. You know, when they hired him, yeah, we need an experienced guy to help us relaunch this new stage of the team. And then you see Yuki Tsunoda beating him. To his credit, you know, and I'm trying to stay positive, he wasn't so far off Yuki this time. He just missed by less than a tenth on getting into Q3. But end of the day, he was out of Q3. Yuki was there. And I think it's just a matter of time before we see someone else put in that car and we just see him catapulted out.
Absolutely. Liam Lawson, you know, he's sitting there waiting. And if Liam doesn't cut it in six races, out. That's how it used to be at Toro Rosso or AlphaTauri or whatever they call it, VCarb now. But with the Dan thing, yeah, I mean, I've been watching it 4-0 in qualifying against Yuki Tsunoda, who's hardly a benchmark, let's be honest. Okay, the kid is good and he was really fast and all that. But really, you know, he didn't get the better of Gasly. Okay, he's upped his game since Gasly, I'd imagine, but he's not max level at all, ever, not close. And that Dan was, you know, he's a 10-time Grand Prix winner. He's forgotten how to drive. I've never said this about a racing driver, but he's forgotten how to drive fast. He's forgotten how to send it like he used to. He's just not the Dan that we once knew. You know what I mean? He's gone. And that Red Bull are giving him such a free pass is unbelievable because, listen, McLaren did not blow away the 15 million in the deal with Daniel thing without giving it a good shot to try and get him back. But they never found the Daniel they thought they hired. They definitely did not. But his connections, Red Bull, very popular in America, all that, I thought, okay, look, he'll go to VCarb and let's see what happens. I expected him to trounce Yuki. Which brings back to the Suzuka thing. You know, he's been to Suzuka often, but so has Yuki. I mean, I think he grew up there. But the bottom line is this, is if you look at all the other teams, they're more experienced drivers, apart from Max and Sergio, of course, but below those guys, Lewis got the better of George. Fernando destroyed Lance. So you expect Daniel to give it to Yuki, but he didn't. And then, honestly, I think if anyone gets in his car from the start and see how he attacks turn one, well, attacks is the wrong word. He looks scared. Honestly, when I saw the onboards, I thought this guy's scared because he got a reasonably good launch. Yuki got a terrible one. Yet Yuki into turn one, Daniel braked far too early and he's got no authority in that. He was the guy backing out of the conflict. So there, you know, and that wasn't Daniel. Daniel of the past would have been breaking at the end, the very end. He was the last of the great breakers, and that's gone. That's gone. And the more time they give him, is less time in the car for a guy like Lawson, which they should give him the rest of the season to see how he goes and really test Yuki, see if Yuki is actually the real deal. But very sad there. And also sad at Williams, mate. You know, I've slagged off James Vowles because he just talks too much. By far, the most of any team principal I've ever encountered. Normally, you know, guys like Ron Dennis, they said three or four words. Frank Williams hardly ever spoke. It was a very bad weekend for Williams. They were on trepidation. I feel so, so bad for their drivers. They're under so much pressure not to make mistakes, and that makes you make more mistakes. And we saw Sargeant made a mistake in the race. He's just so out of his depth, it's unbelievable. I don't know why Sargeant still has a drive. I really don't. I think they should take him aside and, put him out to pasture or whatever, or send him to Le Mans to get more track time and give another driver. But honestly, if I'm managing another driver and the Williams seat comes up, I think to myself, listen, first get your spares sorted out, fixes all the chassis, and then I'll come. But right now, I think they're just going to have to deal with Sargeant and what they have. But it's a very poor show. But maybe I'm exaggerating. You know, maybe the Williams thing is normal. I don't know. You know, I spoke to the FIA. They said, yeah, well, but there's no rule to say your team can't be this shit. You know, there's no rule to say you have not, you're going to be thrown out of Formula One because it's unacceptable. You know, there's no rule because they've voted themselves into this little cabal of 10 teams. But Williams, in effect, should be sent out. And every team should arrive at the first race with a spare chassis and two cars. I mean, I don't know. Am I being old school? Am I being silly? You know, in requesting that the best 10 teams in the world actually have the best kit and the best cars, and we're not reporting every day from Suzuki if Williams are going to have one car on the grid or two. That is ridiculous. Maybe it's just me. You tell me.
Look, I understand your fury over here. Look, there's nothing to say about that. I can't add more about the situation they're in. It's just appalling. I can't say anything more. But on the fact that, yeah, they don't have the spare chassis, and the fact that they might bring the sport into disrepute, which is something you and I discussed. Yeah, in a time when they say that we can't bring Andretti because Andretti, they're not going to add value, then you have a team like Williams having these kind of things. It kind of puts things into perspective. But yeah, honestly, sometimes I get frustrated talking about it because there's nothing we can change. You know, we just have to report it. And this is the situation. We have to live with it.
Indeed. So that was a Japanese Grand Prix. Is there anything else we should talk about before we sign off on this?
Yeah, Sauber now fixed their... Sauber had proper pit stops and the wheels were coming on and off properly, but that took them 5 seconds. So, yeah.
Yeah, the rest of the teams are pretty anonymous, I must be honest. I would say even with the cost cap, the golf still remains the same.
Yeah,
it's the good teams, two or three of them, and then the rubbish. I mean, rubbish in terms of relative to the best team in the world, which is Red Bull. I mean, because let's be honest, Red Bull are the best team in the world. You know, sometimes when we say rubbish, we've got to contextualize it. I mean,
exactly.
Red Bull are the best team in the world. Ferrari are second best. Third best could be McLaren, Aston Martin, or Mercedes. Mercedes should be at the top, so they're rubbish compared to where they used to be when they used to win 8 championships. When Lewis used to win every weekend to now, they're rubbish, right? Let's be honest. Yeah. That's why I'm trying to say rubbish, not rubbish relative to, you know, Joe Soap's GT3 team. I'm talking rubbish relative to the 10 top best teams and what they once were. And then the rest, mate, the rest.
Yeah.
You know, budget cap or not. I mean, everyone says, the gap's better, but it is, but it's still an age in terms of race pace and execution and slickness. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So relatively speaking, they're pretty rubbish compared to Red Bull. Because any teams being lapped in Formula One in this modern era with bulletproof cars where the field is supposedly very narrow.
Yeah.
Mate, you know, you're being lapped. You know what I mean? You're rubbish.
Exactly.
Relative to Formula One. So bring Andretti in. Maybe he's rubbish and he can't. You know, maybe that team is not good, but give him a chance. You know, don't keep a guy like Williams who can only get one car on the grid for one race. And then let's see what they come up with in China. They're not even going to have a spare for China. So let's see that. There's a lot of damage there, Williams, you know. So, yeah, that's my takeaway from the Japanese Grand Prix. Red Bull, totally dominant. Everyone else chasing their tails. Mercedes, don't know where they are. They should know. They won 5 times at Suzuka, and I don't think they're going to ever win again this rate. So that's my takeaway. You know, Max is not going to be stopped. What's your takeaway, mate? Just to finalize.
I think that sums it up nicely. Yeah, Red Bull are on their way to another championship, and it's going to be maybe the double is going to be easier this year with Perez doing so well. And yeah, so next time we talk after China, it's the first sprint weekend of the season. So thank you, everyone.
Yeah, before we go, you heard it here first. Max Verstappen, 2024 FIA Formula One World Champion. We've crowned him today because that's where it is. That's how I see it. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.